Hey guys, welcome to the Bitcoin Fortress podcast, helping you increase your financial freedom. This is episode 107, recorded here on March 17th, 2024. This podcast is for entertainment only, not investing advice. So as always, please do your own homework. Well, we've got a lot to cover again this week. We'll start with the market update outlook, get into the top Bitcoin news, and then wrap up with a featured Substack post on the Bitcoin Fortress Substack. Jumping right in, the S&P 500 fell Friday and posted its second straight weekly loss, with tech stocks particularly feeling the heat as inflation concerns linger ahead of next week's Federal Reserve policy meeting. Investor concerns rose after a raft of data showed inflation rising more than economists expected, helping push the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield 21 points higher this week, raising questions about whether inflation has cooled enough for the Fed to cut interest rates this June. For the week, the S&P 500 slipped 0.1%, the Dow Jones lost less than 0.1%, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ fell 0.7%. Looking ahead, the Federal Reserve meeting. Oh, it's that time. Time to figure out what to do. We need to watch the Fed. The Federal Reserve meeting will draw all the attention this week, even though traders consider it a fait accompli. Fed funds futures say there is a 99% chance that the Federal Open Market Committee keeps interest rates on hold. This past week's hot inflation data has cemented that belief and put the focus on the summary of economic projections, also known as the dot plot. For now, the market is still pricing in a first quarter point rate cut in June. One analyst says, based on the February CPI, the Fed needs to seriously increase the hawkish tone of its communications in order to dampen expectations regarding the timing and extent of Fed rate cuts in 2024. But if FOMC members push out their forecasts, the higher for longer narrative will gain steam again. Along with the Fed, there will be a host of housing numbers to consider: the NAHB housing market index for March, the February starts and permits figures, and February existing home sales are all due out. Moving into the top Bitcoin news, this article is from Bitcoin Magazine. Article's entitled, "Craig Wright is not the inventor of Bitcoin, Judge Rules." And this was posted on March 14th. In a landmark ruling, a judge at London's High Court declared that Craig Wright, the Australian, quote, computer scientist, who has long claimed to be the elusive creator of Bitcoin, is not Satoshi Nakamoto. This decision came following a legal confrontation with the Crypto Open Patent Alliance, seeking to prevent Wright from suing Bitcoin developers and requesting a ruling affirming that he's not Satoshi. Judge James Mellor delivered the verdict on Thursday, asserting that Wright is not the sued anonymous inventor of the first and original cryptocurrency. The judge promised to provide detailed reasons for his decision at a later date. The trial unfolded amidst ongoing legal battles between Wright and COPPA, with Wright issuing a settlement offer to the alliance and other involved parties. In his proposal, Wright offered to waive his purported database rights and copyrights related to Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and Bitcoin ABC databases. However, COPPA rejected the offer, emphasizing that it would imply acceptance of Wright's self-proclaimed identity as Satoshi Nakamoto. Moreover, COPPA presented new forensic evidence during the trial to discredit Wright's claim, including the discovery of a ChatGPT forgery by Wright, suggesting that the evidence he presented was fabricated. Despite Wright's persistent assertions, COPPA remains steadfast in its position against recognizing him as Satoshi Nakamoto. Last night, COPPA detailed more reasons why Craig Wright cannot be Satoshi Nakamoto. These points came in addition to a large number of arguments focusing on Wright's fraud and forgeries on an industrial scale, COPPA stated. So there you have it. Of course, many in the community have believed for a long time that he was a fraud. Apparently, the UK legal system is different than in the US. So when you get sued, the burden of proof is on the person who's getting sued. So that's why COPPA decided to sue Craig Wright to prove that he was Satoshi, since he would have to come up with evidence in order to prevail. And obviously that didn't happen, including all kinds of fake things and whatnot that he came up with. So hopefully we can move on. It's good because he was harassing the Bitcoin Core developers, and a lot of them didn't want to work on the project because, you know, who wants to be having to deal with getting sued all the time? Next article is from bitcoinnews.com. This was posted today. Prosecutors seek 50-year sentence on Bankman-Fried. In a landmark case that has rocked the digital asset world, Sam Bankman-Fried, the founder of FTX, faces the possibility of spending up to 50 years behind bars for orchestrating what prosecutors describe as one of the largest financial frauds in history. As many await Sam Bankman-Fried sentencing, U.S. prosecutors assert that 50 years jail time aligns with the severity of his crimes. Bankman-Fried's lawyers deemed a potential 110-year prison term grotesque during his trial for alleged crimes. In November 2022, he lost all his wealth as FTX went bankrupt due to a surge in customers pulling out their funds. Bankman-Fried, once hailed as a rising star in the digital asset industry, stands accused of masterminding a scheme that saw billions of dollars vanish from the accounts of FTX customers and investors. According to prosecutors, Bankman-Fried's actions led to losses exceeding $8 billion, affecting thousands of individuals worldwide. Prosecutors paint a damning picture of Bankman-Fried's conduct, citing his unmatched greed and hubris as key factors driving the fraudulent activities. Despite his conviction on 7 counts of fraud and conspiracy, Bankman-Fried has shown no remorse, with prosecutors noting his life in recent years has been one of unmatched greed and hubris, of ambition and rationalization, and courting risk and gambling repeatedly with other people's money. And even now, Bankman-Fried refuses to admit what he did was wrong. Prosecutors depict Sam Bankman-Fried as a driven individual with grand ambitions, quoting, having set himself on the goal of amassing endless wealth and unlimited power to the point that he thought he might become president and the world's first trillionaire. There was little Bankman-Fried did not do to achieve it. They characterized the case as one of deceit and exploitation, saying this case has always been about lying, cheating, and stealing, and we have no patience for it. They accused Bankman-Fried of disregarding societal norms and engaging in illegal activities fueled by his own sense of superiority, noting he knew what society deemed illegal and unethical, but disregarded that based on a pernicious megalomania guided by the defendant's own values and sense of superiority. Furthermore, they alleged that he victimized numerous individuals and entities over several years through various means, such as stealing money, lying to investors, and illegal political contributions. The prosecutors claimed that Bankman-Fried continued to evade responsibility even after his arrest, attempting to tamper with witnesses and lying under oath. They emphasized the potential danger of releasing him back into society, citing his history and stating a significant likelihood that if the defendant is released back into society at a young enough age, he will have the opportunity to engage in another fraud. They pointed to his post-bankruptcy mussings about launching another exchange, suggesting a pattern of behavior. The rise and fall of Sam Bankman-Fried represent a cautionary tale within the digital assets realm. Once celebrated for his entrepreneurial prowess and philanthropic endeavors, Bankman-Fried's reputation now lies in tatters following the collapse of FTX and the subsequent revelations of financial misconduct. FTX, which at its peak boasted a valuation of $32 billion, was propelled into the mainstream through high-profile marketing campaigns featuring celebrities like Tom Brady and Larry David. However, behind the glitz and glamour, prosecutors allege a darker reality characterized by deception and misappropriation of funds. As the legal battle unfolds, prosecutors and defense attorneys present starkly contrasting arguments regarding the appropriate punishment for Bankman-Fried's crimes. Prosecutors are adamant in their call for a severe sentence, seeking up to 50 years in prison to reflect the gravity of the offenses committed. They emphasized the devastating impact of Bankman-Fried's actions on victims, highlighting the sense of dread and despair experienced by those who entrusted their savings to FTX. Bankman-Fried's legal team, however, made their case in a document submitted before sentencing. Sam is a 31-year-old, first-time nonviolent offender who was joined in the conduct at issue by at least four other culpable individuals in a matter where victims are poised to recover, were always poised to recover, 100 cents on the dollar. Bankman-Fried's defense team appeals for leniency, advocating for a maximum sentence of 6.5 years. They portray their client as a young man with a commitment to philanthropy, arguing against the imposition of a grotesque and barbaric 100-year term recommended by probation officers. Mark Mukasey, the attorney representing the former billionaire, stated to the U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan that a sentence ranging from 5.25 to 6.5 years in prison would be fitting. Since August, he's been imprisoned at Brooklyn's Metropolitan Detention Center after his bail was revoked by Kaplan for probable witness tampering. As the sentencing hearing looms on March 28, the outcome of Bankman-Fried's case carries significant implications for the broader digital asset industry and beyond. The verdict will not only serve as a measure of accountability for those involved, but also shape perceptions of regulatory oversight within the digital asset space. Despite the uncertainty surrounding his fate, Bankman-Fried remains determined to appeal against the verdict. His legal team contends that the allegations against him, including claims of bribery and unlawful political donations, warrant further examination beyond the confines of the initial trial. The prosecution of Sam Bankman-Fried represents a pivotal moment in the evolution of digital assets regulation as authorities strive to uphold the rule of law in the face of emerging financial technologies. The outcome of this case will reverberate throughout the industry, underscoring the importance of transparency and accountability in the digital age. And yes, it will be quite interesting to see what kind of a sentence he actually gets, whether he's able to appeal it. You know, the only reason why people are able to recover any money is because obviously crypto assets have rallied tremendously. So, you know, getting 100% of your investment back sounds great, but the reality is that you should have made 10x your money, you know, so that doesn't excuse him from his theft, nor does, you know, the government decided to drop the case against him on the whole, you know, political meddling, you know, where he was basically giving money to everybody, Democrats, Republicans, etc., to influence legislation. So, and the fact that prosecutors are asking for 50 instead of 100, which is what he deserves and should get under the sentencing guidelines, just tells me that, you know, it's probably going to be something less, and maybe he'll get out on probation and he'll be back up to his old tricks again, because it's not what you know, it's who you know. And anyway, we'll see. Hopefully he gets what he deserves. Next article is from Bitcoin.com. This was posted 2 days ago on the 15th. Article is entitled, El Salvador moves big chunk of its Bitcoin to cold wallet. President Bukele says, call it our first Bitcoin piggy bank. So more news in El Salvador. El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele announced on social media platform X Thursday that El Salvador has decided to transfer a big chunk of its Bitcoin holdings to a cold wallet and store it in a physical vault within its national territory. You can call it our first Bitcoin piggy bank, he wrote, adding, it's not much, but it's honest work. The Salvadoran leader also posted the wallet address for the public to see. The wallet address, they list it here in the article, so you can look it up too if you want on Blockchain Explorer. As of writing, the wallet's balance is 5,689.723353515 Bitcoin, including many small transfers of random amounts that were sent to the address after President Bukele posted the above screenshot. So I guess they're getting donations now. Many social media users commended El Salvador Bukele's approach to Bitcoin and his transparency. Pretty incredible to see a president tweeting about Bitcoin nation-state self-custody. It's no wonder Bitcoiners feel welcome in El Salvador, one wrote. The leadership and vision of President Nayib Bukele have transcended boundaries. We are witnessing the beginning of a new era. El Salvador is advancing by leaps and bounds towards leadership in the cryptocurrency market, especially with Bitcoin, another opined. El Salvador became the first country to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender alongside the US dollar in September 2021, despite warnings from the International Monetary Fund. Since then, the country has been acquiring Bitcoin through various means, including purchases and mining, and has also been generating revenue from Bitcoin-related initiatives. Venture capitalist Tim Draper recently said that he expects Bitcoin to transform El Salvador into one of the richest countries in the world. Last month, Bukele affirmed that El Salvador will not sell any of its bitcoins, emphasizing at the end, one bitcoin equals one bitcoin. Also on the government news line here, this is from Crypto News, posted, let's see, when was this posted? March 10th. US authorities to impose 30% electricity tax on crypto mining. I'll actually have a blog post coming up on that subject next week. The President Joe Biden administration has proposed imposing a 30% electricity tax on crypto mining operations in the United States. The move is attracting severe criticism from industry players. Despite the unfavorable market conditions and FUD that have plagued the Web3 space since last year, the President Joe Biden regime is set to introduce a new tax rule that will make life even more difficult for crypto market participants in the U.S. According to the administration's fiscal year 2024 revenue proposal document released by the Department of Treasury on March 9th, miners' proof-of-work crypto assets like Bitcoin will soon be required to cough out a 30% tax based on their electricity usage. The proposed electricity tax rule is expected to be implemented over 3 years at 10% annual stages beginning December 31st, 2023. The government also plans to apply the wash trading rules that govern securities such as stocks to crypto. A section of the document reads, "The wash sale rules would be amended to add digital assets to the list of assets subject to the wash sale rules." That's when you sell an asset and buy, for a loss, and then you buy it back right away. I think the wash sale rules make you wait like 3 months or something before you can buy it back. Except as otherwise provided by the secretary, the term digital assets means any digital representation of value, which is stored on a cryptographically secured distributed ledger or any similar technology as specified by the secretary. So the wash sale rules apply to stocks, bonds, all sorts of other assets, but just has never really applied to crypto assets. So, what a lot of people have done is they've just, if they wanted to generate losses at the end of the year, they would sell in December and then buy right back on January 1st, and there'd be no tax consequences of that. But sounds like that's going away. As expected, the proposed rules have been condemned by crypto proponents on social media, with somebody called @OxFubar describing the move as anti-American authoritarianism. Last week, reports emerged that U.S. authorities plan to clamp down on Bitcoin miners using natural gas to power their operations without paying the necessary royalties. Yeah, so this is, then they fight you. And let's see. Yep, I think that wraps that one up. So again, I'm going to be writing about that on the blog post next week. So check that out if you get time. And I think this is really bad for the industry because if they do implement this, it's going to make it much more expensive for miners to operate in the United States. And they're just going to go somewhere else, and there go all the jobs. Next article is from BitcoinNews.com, one of my favorite sources. This article was posted on March 15th. A little bit of government FUD. Sweden's central bank rejects Bitcoin. The less, the better. Direct quote. Sweden's central bank governor Erik Thedin has raised concerns about the integration of Bitcoin into the nation's financial system. His warnings come amidst a surge in the digital asset's popularity and record-breaking highs in its value. Thedin emphasizes the speculative nature of Bitcoin, stating, "I want as little Bitcoin as possible in the Swedish financial system. It's an instrument that is impossible to value, and in practice, it's based on pure speculation." This sentiment echoes throughout his statements, highlighting the risks associated with digital asset investments. Despite Bitcoin's current lack of threat to financial stability, Thedin warns of potential risk to consumers. He cites instances of digital asset exchanges collapsing, leading to significant losses for individuals. Well, don't hold your coins on an exchange. Just hold it in cold storage. You don't have to worry about that. The Dean's concern extends to protecting citizens from false hopes of easy profits in the volatile digital assets market. Easy profits. Let's see. 70 to 80% drawdowns, followed by 5x and 10x. I don't think you call that easy profits. I think you call that conviction if you're going to hodl through market cycles. But who am I? We have seen exchanges in the U.S. collapse and individuals losing money. Right now, there's a surge, but we have seen the value collapsing not long ago, and it's important to warn people who believe there's no limit and that there's free money to be made. Well, that obviously misses the point. It's not free money. It is money. Sweden's stance on digital assets has been consistent. In 2022, the nation led European Union regulators in advocating for a ban on mining due to energy concerns. Additionally, tax incentives for data centers, including Bitcoin mining, were abolished, signaling a commitment to regulating the industry. The Dean's current position aligns with these efforts, advocating for minimal integration of the leading digital asset in the Swedish financial system. So I guess they're just going to have fun staying poor then. The Dean's stance mirrors that of his predecessor, Stefan Ingves, who likened Bitcoin trading to the collection of trading stamps. This consistent skepticism from the central bank underscores the cautious approach towards digital assets. The Dean's warnings highlight broader concerns about the impact of digital assets on financial systems worldwide. He believes despite Bitcoin's surging value, its speculative nature poses challenges for regulators and policymakers aiming to maintain stability and protect consumers. Erik Thedin's cautionary stance on Bitcoin integration into Sweden's financial system underscores the challenges the digital asset might face in Sweden. With a focus on minimizing exposure and protecting consumers, the central bank seeks to navigate the complexities of the evolving digital asset landscape. As debates surrounding regulation and mainstream adoption continue, Thedin's warnings highlight the difficult path the leading digital asset has on its road to mainstream adoption. And it's not surprising to see a central bank not like Bitcoin because it's actually designed to put them out of business. So there you have it. Also on the FUD front, this one from the corporate suits at Vanguard. So not a store of value. Vanguard CEO labels Bitcoin the too speculative for long-term portfolios, reaffirming Vanguard's perspective on Bitcoin. During a recent interview, CEO Tim Buckley echoed the sentiments previously expressed by the firm's global head of ETF capital markets and broker and index relations, who labeled it as a, quote, immature asset class. This reaffirmation came in the wake of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission's approval of several spot Bitcoin ETFs, which led to Vanguard customers discovering they were restricted from trading these newly introduced funds. In a detailed discussion on the topic, Buckley made it clear that Vanguard's stance on not incorporating spot Bitcoin exchange-traded funds into their offerings remains firm. Faced with inquiries about a potential change in perspective, Buckley firmly stated, "We don't plan to. We're not going to change our minds around this," Buckley asserted, "unless the asset class changes. First of all, we don't believe a Bitcoin ETF belongs in a long-term portfolio." Wow, he's really doubling down. Someone's saving for their retirement. It's a speculative asset. The interviewer concurred with Buckley's assessment of Bitcoin as a speculative asset, responding, "That's exactly it." Buckley elaborated that Vanguard focuses on investment classes backed by tangible cash flows, We mentioned stocks. You're buying the forward earnings of a company, the head of Vanguard explained. He underscored that, in his view, Bitcoin does not qualify as a reliable store of value. It hasn't served as one and is marked by extreme volatility, Buckley noted. He highlighted that stocks got hammered with recent crises and Bitcoin went right with them. With a hint of irony, Buckley concluded, "So it is speculative and it's tough to figure out how it belongs in the long-term portfolio." Buckley is set to step down as chairman and chief executive officer by the end of 2024, marking the culmination of over 30 years with the firm. Well, maybe the next guy will wake up and smell the coffee, because you don't have to love Bitcoin if you're a suit. You just want to make money, and they're missing out on an opportunity to make money. So, in my opinion, that's just retarded, and that's probably why the guy's quitting or stepping down, whatever you call it. Next up is from BitcoinNews.com. This article was posted today, and now we're going to move into the hopium. Bitcoin is the apex property for the human race. This is what the most valuable property in the world looks like. It's a digital Rubik's Cube with 21 million units. You can't touch it or live in it, yet all the value in the world transferred into the digital realm will be captured in this space one day. It is a digital citadel, a city in cyberspace, and the apex property. Its ability to perform multiple functions can create confusion around what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is considered property because it possesses characteristics that align with traditional definitions of property. It is something you can prove that you own. You control it, and you can transfer the ownership of it, just like other forms of property, such as real estate or stocks. Bitcoin can be bought, sold, exchanged, and used as collateral. Additionally, its ownership is recorded on a decentralized ledger known as the blockchain, providing proof of ownership and facilitating secure transactions. Therefore, despite being intangible and existing in digital form, Bitcoin is recognized as property under many legal systems and can be subject to property laws and regulations. The first 50 years of the digital world, humanity had no tool to enforce scarcity. Anyone could copy a JPEG file an infinite number of times. Inability to enforce scarcity in the non-physical realm led the internet to evolve into the predatory surveillance capital apparatus of today, where the most valuable commodity online is data. In a world where data items can be properly valued, more complex economic systems can be erected on that foundation. Bitcoin will enable a new way of thinking about digital ownership. Think of this real estate as Jesse Myers conceived, being the bedrock for a new era in the digital economy. And there's a little graphic in here so you can check it out. All the links to everything I'm going over will be in the show notes. So I would highly recommend that you look at the pictures. What is interesting about the architecture is that an investor can own part of the base layer of this new technology and can be relatively agnostic about what specific applications are built on top of it. It would be akin to being able to own the base layer of the internet and getting exposure to all of the innovation on top, for example, Google, Amazon, etc., without having to try to pick specific winners and losers. Bitcoin is unique as property because it's uniformly valuable and available to anyone who has the internet. Its divisibility means no one is excluded regardless of how much they can afford. Since it cannot be confiscated or taken by force, Bitcoin solves the problem of protecting valuable property because it doesn't degrade over time. Bitcoin as property is pristine and timeless. While defending his most recent Bitcoin purchase, Michael Saylor spelled the plan out when he was pushed to explain what his end game for accumulating this digital property is. It's the best investment asset. The end game is to acquire more Bitcoin. Whoever gets the most Bitcoin wins. Using the analogy of real estate, Saylor compared his strategy to land developers in New York City who have been handsomely rewarded for reinvesting in New York City for the past 300 years. He stated New York City is the end game of real estate in North America, so it wouldn't make sense for people to sell that real estate for paper. He went on to explain that a commonality among the world's ultra-wealthy is the strategy of not trading desirable and rare property for paper. The royal family of England didn't sell all of its property in central London to buy paper money. Anyone that's rich in the world owns property. They want to own the property forever. He punctuated his argument with the statement, "Bitcoin is the end game for anyone who wants to own the greatest property in the 21st century." Humanity has always searched for property that can store monetary energy. It is why we chase the ownership of rare and valuable things. Art, real estate, collectibles, gold are all stores of value. The invention of scarcity in the digital world has leveled the playing field and provided us all with fair access to an apex store of value. This is why Bitcoin outperforms and will continue to do so. As more people understand what Bitcoin offers, more will choose to reallocate capital from other stores of value to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a city in cyberspace that's 276 blocks wide, 276 blocks high, 276 blocks deep. Every person on the planet, all 8 billion, will want to live there one day. As capital flows in from the fiat world, fiat values of other stores of value will drop in Bitcoin terms. Those who sell their digital property for paper money today will be selling it for things that will eventually trade their value for smaller and smaller blocks of the best form of property that has ever existed. The end game is the ability to store your monetary energy. It's a game that everyone has to play. Bitcoin is not an asset class. It is the most efficient store of monetary energy the human race has ever seen. 8 billion people need a place to store their monetary energy. So does every company, government, endowment, pension, and any other entity that needs to preserve wealth over space and time. So long as there is money, there will be a need to store it. Bitcoin is the rarest form of property in the world and is globally accessible and available to anyone with an internet connection. It is indestructible. It will outlive you. Trading your Bitcoin for paper today is a trade that can only get worse as time passes. And that, my friends, is a fact. Next up is from CoinDesk. Talked about Saylor, and so talking about him again. This article was posted on March 15th, entitled "Michael Saylor's MicroStrategy Prices Upsized $525 Million Debt Offering to Buy More Bitcoin." Self-described Bitcoin development company MicroStrategy is set to add to its 205,000 Bitcoin stack after pricing a $525 million convertible debt offering. The private placement was upsized from an originally planned $500 million. And the purchasers were granted an option to buy up to an additional 78.5 million of the paper, meaning proceeds are likely to be in the 600 million area. The convertible senior notes will have an interest rate of 0.875% per annum, compared to 0.625% in a sale of $800 million of similar debt that took place just days ago. The conversion rate of the new notes will be equivalent to $2,327.31 per share, representing a premium of approximately 40% on MicroStrategy's Thursday average price of $1,662.20. MicroStrategy shares dropped 5% on Thursday as Bitcoin declined below 70,000. Shares are lower by 3.3% in pre-market action alongside a continued fall in Bitcoin, now trading at 67,700. So MicroStrategy is going to keep doing what they've been doing, and I'm sure they're going to continue to basically a speculative attack on the US dollar, borrowing in dollar fiat at very cheap interest rates to buy the most scarce asset in the world. So there's two camps with Michael Saylor. Either he's a total retard or the greatest genius that's ever lived, and I think I'm going to be in the greatest genius camp with him. Next up is from bitcoinnews.com. This article was also updated, posted today. A little bit more on adoption. The London Stock Exchange is going to accept Bitcoin-backed ETNs. Amid Bitcoin's recent price surge and growing investor interest, the London Stock Exchange has announced its plan to start accepting applications for the admission of Bitcoin-backed exchange-traded notes in the second quarter of 2024. ETNs, defined as debt securities offering exposure to an underlying asset, enable investors to trade securities tracking digital assets during London trading hours. This move by the LSE will provide professional investors with a new avenue to engage with the burgeoning asset class, making a significant milestone in the integration of Bitcoin into traditional financial markets. According to the statement released by the exchange on Monday, there are three primary criteria that any proposed notes must meet, including being non-leveraged and backed solely by Bitcoin. Secondly, the custodian or custodians responsible for holding the assets must adhere to anti-money laundering regulations in the UK, European Union, Jersey, Switzerland, or the United States. Moreover, the proposed notes are also required to hold at least 90% of Bitcoin in an offline depository wallet, or subject to arrangements that achieve an equivalent outcome to cold storage. Notably, the application process for these Bitcoin-backed ETNs will kick off in the second quarter of the year, with the exact launch date to be confirmed subsequently. The announcement comes amid a bullish run for Bitcoin, which recently surpassed the $71,000 mark for the first time, recording a staggering rally of nearly 70% this year. The surge was mainly fueled by substantial inflows into the recently launched U.S. spot Bitcoin exchange-traded funds. As per the latest data by BitMEX Research on Friday, spot ETFs collectively witnessed a net inflow of $199 million. Notably, investors have injected over $11 billion into new Bitcoin ETFs launched in the U.S. over the past 2 months, triggering a widespread surge in the digital asset markets. The LSE emphasized that it will accept applications in accordance with a fact sheet previously published, with early engagement encouraged from prospective issuers. It stated in the admission fact sheet, "In order to mitigate the risk of delay in the admission timetable, the exchange encourages early engagement from prospective issuers interested in admitting crypto ETNs to trading on the exchange." However, the LSE clarified that these digital asset ETNs will be exclusively available for professional investors, as stipulated in the admission fact sheet. Uh-oh, not good enough for the plebs, I guess. In parallel, the Financial Conduct Authority of the UK has stated its non-objection to proposals from recognized investment exchanges to establish a listed market segment for digital asset-backed ETNs. Despite this development, the FCA remains steadfast in its stance that Bitcoin ETNs and derivatives are unsuitable for retail consumers due to associated risks. No. This cautious approach underscores ongoing regulatory scrutiny and the need for investor protection. Wow, the government really wants to protect us. Isn't that great? The LSE's decision underscores the increasing convergence of Bitcoin and mainstream finance. Its plans to facilitate the trading of Bitcoin-backed ETNs reflects a broader trend of traditional financial institutions embracing digital assets. So just buy Bitcoin and hold it in cold storage and skip the ETNs. Who cares? Don't need them. And then finally, just wanted to highlight this week's post on the Bitcoin Fortress Substack entitled "More Authoritarianism, Please," taking additional steps to address the national emergency with respect to significant malicious cyber-enabled activities. This is a new proposal that wants to crack down on internet as a service provider who do business with foreigners, and also to crack down on foreigners using AI technology that could be used maliciously. Basically, it's just a more invasion of constitutional rights and more authoritarianism, and this probably could affect people who use VPNs as well, because it's basically requiring KYC kind of for these companies that use these platforms. So check it out, link in the show notes. And if you would, please share with everybody and subscribe. And that wraps it up. So thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please like and leave a comment. Also, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. I do listen to all mine on Fountain, where you can earn sats just for listening. So do that. You can follow my Substack again at bitcoinfortress.substack.com. You can follow me on Noster. My NPub is included in the show notes. And with that, I will talk to y'all next week. Bye bye.